It is Friday, December 16th, 2016. I'm Bruce Van Dyke.
I'm Craig Adams.
I'm reading that because that's right there on the masthead of the Chronicle Telegram. And I'm holding the Chronicle because we have with us reporter from the Chronicle, Steve Fogarty, joining us this morning. He's been with the Chronicle for quite a number of years. In fact, Steve, I see you have the front page story in today's paper. How did that come about for you?
Well, as Bruce, good morning, guys. As we were talking just a minute ago there before the segment began, and you were asking about what some of my primary duties are, and I said, well, you always, plus your actual assigned duties or your quote-unquote beat, we still use that term in the biz, you can be called upon at a moment's notice to handle whatever comes down the pike. And so yesterday, our managing editor just said, my boss said, hey, can you work on another weather story? I'd done two, one for yesterday's edition. And she said, can you do one for today? Because the weather essentially kind of missed us, walloped points east of here, and then kind of talk about some different situations that they had with, school closings.
Arctic front hits and misses, and that's a frigid blast that canceled school in the northeast portion of the county. Winds up no big deal elsewhere.
Now, in a case like this, did you have to take your life in your hands and travel to these snow-driven places?
No, this was all done from the comfort of the newsroom. So, no, I can't give you some scintillatingly exciting.
As you can see
account.
By the photo critic, Bruce Bishop is the one that had to travel down the roads, the dry
right.
roads and the snow-covered roads.
We shoved him out the door, and yes, I stayed warm and comfy. Yes.
I imagine you put him in the snow suit and get him going and then just put him out there to get the stories and bring them back, hopefully. And, of course, in these days, the pictures and images kind of come back faster than they used to when you first started. Now, when did you begin working with the Chronicle? Craig, can you move Steve's microphone over here?
Because
it was going to move off the microphone.
We're going to get right up on there.
Make sure you talk to him.
Right. Get your lips up on it.
All righty. Well, actually, as I've been telling many people, I will be retiring here at the end of the year. And I said, I hate to say it out loud, but I actually began in 1978.
And do you remember kind of what brought you to the Chronicle-Telegram? Is there a story there, or maybe the first story you covered, depending on how much you want to divulge this morning for this?
Well, ironically enough, I came to this area from my hometown of Dayton because I interviewed for and landed a job. In fact, the day I interviewed for it, right here at WEOL. That's how I got to this area.
Wow.
So what did you do here?
I worked in the news department for approximately 18 months, and that's how I got here.
On air, off air, different beats?
Both, yeah. You know, covering everything. I think we had a three-person news department, as I recall then, under a great news director, Ross Baird. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have heard the name.
Sure.
And I also worked with Sandy Kozel, mm-hmm. who you still hear do news for AP.
Right.
I think in other sources. And we worked together right here in the news department.
So then what happened? You were here 18 months.
Here 18 months.
And somebody at the newspaper said, Steve, come and work for us. We'll give you big money.
Maybe he bought an electric typewriter or something. Now that was able to.
That's right. A Cadillac, the Selectric with the ball.
Love those things.
Oh yeah, they were great. Then that year and a half stint sort of morphed into within a few months' time. Morphed into I started to freelance, do a lot of features for the paper. They liked my work, and within a few months they offered me a full time position, and sort of the rest, as they say, is history.
Did you enjoy your time in radio?
I did. Yes, I did. I really did enjoy it. You might not say I exactly had a basso profundo voice for radio, but I certainly enjoyed the time here. Yeah. Met a lot of fun people, made some good friendships.
His vocabulary is pretty good, though.
Oh, yeah.
Say,
he said profundo. I think that's the first time anybody said that on the air in 30, 40 years here.
Yeah. Well, there's no profundity allowed in our broadcasting on the radio here as well. Steve came up many times when our host Bill King was here, and he was hosting different things in the morning show. And at that time, there was a point where you were covering what sometimes people say, that's a dream job. I get to go see movies. I cover entertainment. Tell me a little bit about that time at the Chronicle-Telegram.
Yes, that came after, I'd done a number of various things. I began in a news bureau we had in North Olmsted way back when, worked there about 4 years, then moved into the main newsroom, basically covered news for a number of years, and then that led into a period for, and I can't tell you the exact number of years, but I'm going to say approximately 15, when I fairly exclusively did, again, features and a lot of entertainment writing, including movie reviews, when we used to have our Encore weekend magazine.
Now, would you go to a movie a couple of weeks before it comes out? There's like always a preview thing that comes out, right? And would you do a review or a critique? How would you describe what you were doing at that time, and what was what you felt that your purpose for the reader was?
Yes, it was a review, and we would go typically sometimes sneak previews, the bulk of which tended to be over at large theaters on the east side of Cleveland, just the way it worked. But they would usually happen the same week of the opening of a film, like on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night. And so that way the reviews would roll into newspapers or they would come out whatever form of media just a day or two before a film opened.
Do you remember the worst film you saw during that particular time, or ones where you thought to yourself, man, I wish I was back on that other beat instead of having to sit here at 10 o'clock at night looking at a film?
Oh, Lord, there have been some just dreadful, some god-awful movies, as there are in any time, including right now. But, oh, boy, to try to single one out, I will say it's funny how this will tend to come to mind when I think of dreadful movies. I don't know if you fellows remember Ishtar?
Sure.
With
sure.
Dustin Hoffman and
Warren Beatty.
Yeah. Oh, my Lord. Now, there's two pretty impressive talents, but you couldn't tell it by that film.
And they were hotter than hot at that time.
Yes, they were. Yeah. Yes, Craig, they absolutely were.
Did Warren Beatty direct that movie? Do you know offhand?
Now, that I'm not certain of.
I don't think.
That took a lot. I remember that took a lot of heat when it came out.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That happens.
Have you seen it, Bruce?
I might have. I don't.
I have not. I've avoided it.
And as some people have said later on, it's not sort of as bad as you thought it was then. I guess maybe sometimes there's a little age. Maybe it's just sort of nostalgia,
right?
Things soften,
I guess, over time. And that sometimes does happen. I've never gone back to watch it again. Maybe I should.
And maybe people thought at the time they expected more because of those two guys in the movie.
That's true, and so maybe it would be through a softer lens now, saying, well, they're now older talents and not doing as much, and we really gave them a rough time back then. So,
not to interject myself, but I will. The worst movie that I ever saw only time I ever thought about going to get my money back was the Robin Williams movie called Toys, where he was like this guy and this other army of toys. It was just to me, it was an awful film at that particular point, but everybody in their career has something like that.
They do. It doesn't matter how truly talented a performer is. Yes, everyone has. If they're popular enough, they're constantly working. They're going to stumble now and then, and they're going to go off the rails.
Along those same lines. During that time, did you have an opportunity to meet any so-called stars, whether it was in the movie industry or, performance industries?
Well, I was thinking about this the other night and kind of making a few notes of people that I basically got to interview over the years. Most by phone, of course. Mm-hmm. A very few of these people we interviewed in person. I will say that a pair of gentlemen that definitely served as inspirations for me to help me get into, it kind of drove me into film reviewing. I did get sit-down interviews with Siskel and Ebert at one point. The Cleveland Film Society brought them to town for a fundraiser. It was held at Playhouse Square, and a lot of fun. And so they lined up a day-long series. They said, we want to do this, so bring us to town. Make us work. And, radio, print, TV, all day long, they did interviews. But they insisted they would not do it together, as they appeared on the air. They would not be interviewed together. They had to be interviewed separately.
Now, was that the first time it occurred to you that these two may not have been aisle mates as much as they were on on TV? Or?
Well, you know, I've read that, and I've often wondered whether that was kind of something to just sort of keep up that image of, you know, we're supposed to be like sort of bristling adversaries, or whether indeed they actually, matter of fact, were, that they really did not care for each other all that much. I was never really sure, but they were very adamant, I guess very pointed with the publicist that, no, we won't sit down together, because I think a lot, some outlets ask for that, and they said, no, we want to be talked to separately.
Well, we're talking this morning with Steve Fogarty, who will be retiring from the Chronicle-Telegram. We're going to have more with him coming up in just a moment here at WEOL.
Hello.
Hey, Johnson.
And we are joined this morning by Steve Fogarty, who will be retiring as a reporter for the Chronicle-Telegram. Has been there a number of years. The place you're leaving is a lot different than the place you arrived at, isn't it? I mean, in the newspaper industry, technology, also the climate of the way news is being delivered to people like that now. You've got a smartphone in front of you. What is the reporter's equipment these days? Is there still that kind of weird skinny notepad that I've seen reporters with or used to have around?
Yes, that old classic. It's with a white and blue, a white cover and blue printing on it. I believe it does say, I'm so used to seeing it, that it does say reporter's notebook, I believe. Yeah, a lot of people still use that because it can fit in a pocket. I frankly have always tended toward using a larger notebook, but yeah, very much those are used out in the field because they're very easy to use. But again, such things, we were talking about that too earlier, such things as smartphones, the internet, even simpler tools that you might not think of, so obviously voicemail. None of that, when I started, that's really going to make me sound like Methuselah, but none of that existed.
You now have a story. It used to be you get a story and you'd go someplace, you'd write things in your notepad, if I'm correct, and then you would come back to the paper and you'd look at your notes. Hopefully you could remember what you wrote in a windy day out there and didn't have fast food stains all over it, and you're working your way through it. What happens now, and what are you expected to do with a story that you go to cover? You're doing things in North Ridgeville or other places like that. What's your priorities and how does that work for you?
I will say, I think by and large, the framework of the process basically remains the same of going out, talking to people, observing an event, getting the details, getting the flavor of the atmosphere, describing the scene. If you're at an accident, if it's spot news. Of course, with meetings, those stories tend to tell themselves that there's a lot of, conflict over a public issue before a public body or a court proceeding. Those things tend to tell themselves. So I think the basic framework of the process has not really changed. It's simply that the tools allow us to do this much more quickly. And I think, Bruce, as you mentioned, too, before we didn't have that ultra urgency to say we've got to get this on first, because you didn't have the tools that allowed you the means by which to get it out to the public as you do now with the web. So that has been a very significant change over time.
We mentioned before we went on the air just a little bit, Craig, now this fake news has become news, and that's the term, and that's where everybody's looking at things now. And the fact that it's sort of now it's related somewhat to our presidential election, it's kind of raised the bar of where this is interfering or influencing people as well. So it's going to be interesting to see, I guess, where your industry takes it and what they do. Even though they're not the ones releasing fake news, how they kind of deal with what kind of clouds credibility, I guess.
Yeah, to try to always make sure that legitimate news media, always mediate against that. I know the proliferation of that type of phony news, or even more dangerously, where you're actually mixing facts with some fiction to, quote, make a better story. And they get that out there. And we're talking about, you know, people still try to need to be discerning when they are reading or listening to news, and kind of using their common sense and their own judgment to say, boy, this just doesn't sound right, or this doesn't sound legitimate. But so many times, I think people, as we talked about this earlier, people just will run with what they, right. with what they're hearing.
It shows the impact, even with editors know the impact of a headline. And you write a story, you as a reporter are not responsible for your headline. And that's a whole thing that can probably have heated discussions at some point. But a headline is maybe sometimes all that people see. And even on that, you know, our different social media, headline is what you see. And if you just go through headlines, you absorb that, but never actually looking at any details, if there are any for that.
And that's a very interesting point, too, because that's something that can even continues to impact us from time to time in the print media, that sometimes the headline doesn't, most of the time, I mean, it's pretty spot on, but a lot of times it just doesn't It doesn't quite get the essence of the story.
Well, Steve, we appreciate you coming in this morning and joining us and share a little bit of your stories and all that you do. You'll still be reporting for a while in the Chronicle. They'll still see your byline there. But we appreciate you coming in and wish you success in whatever you are doing beyond the newspaper as well. Thanks.
I thank you both so much, Bruce.